a close call with death. Have you had one? I have. I've had a lot of them, but who's counting? In this session, we'll talk about the events of those of us that have come dangerously close to death and had the great luck or destiny to elude death and carry on. Enjoy the show. So tonight in studio, we have Darren Ewell. Darren was introduced to us by his brother, Mark Ewell, who lives just a few homes away from us here in Utah. And Mark reached out and said, oh my gosh, I've got a heck of a story for you and the show of a close call with death, because my brother suffered a major widowmaker heart attack at a softball game and went for over 30 minutes with no heartbeat. And we're going to get into the details of that incident. We're going to get to know Darren more and what led up to this incident, how it went down, and how his life's changed. So I just want to thank you, Darren, for being on the show. Welcome. Okay, so now just really want to dig in and identify who it is that's sitting in front of me tonight. You know, I appreciate you being here, Darren, big time. And Mark said you're a fantastic guy and said that you have this crazy story to share with me that's a close call with death. And I've actually looked out on YouTube and looked at your story under Darren Ewell heart attack. And when it came up, I saw on Facebook that, my gosh, YouTube, that your video of your incident has been viewed 1.7 million times. And so if anybody wants to go out and see the actual video of you having the incident that you did and a rescuer go out and try and save your life, that is out there on YouTube under Darren Ewell heart attack. Go see it, because it is stunning. So thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You're alive and well and sitting here in front of me. Under normal circumstances, you would not be here. I mean, you would have been gone and deceased, and you're not. And so let's talk a little bit before we get into the story about what actually happened to you with this incident. Let's talk about you and your background. How old are you now? Tell me about your family dynamics, where you live, and things like that.
Okay. My name is Darren Ewell, obviously. I'm 58 years of age. I was born and raised in Utah, in the Taylorsville area. When I got married, I moved just a little further east into Murray. I've lived there since I got married. I married a beautiful woman that I met who was visiting her family from, she was from Florida, but her brother was in Taylorsville where I was living, and met her and fell in love with her from the first time I saw her. And together we've raised five children.
How old were you then when you first met her?
I was 24 and she was 23.
Awesome.
And we were married in 3 months.
Oh my gosh, that's great. And how many years have you been married now?
34 years.
34 years. My gosh, you saw your soulmate. 3 months later, you get married and you've been married 34 years. So something must have been absolutely meant to be.
Yes, absolutely. Meant to be for sure. I could tell from the first time I saw her that that was my wife. And oh, it was an incredible opportunity. But together we've raised five children. And my oldest was Sarah. Then I had a son named Adam, a son named Hiram, a daughter named Abigail, and then my youngest son's Noah. So a lot of biblical names. There's a story behind that, but my wife likes biblical names. And and unfortunately, my oldest daughter, Sarah.
Beautiful names.
Yeah, thank you. My oldest daughter, Sarah, passed away from cancer 2 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
April 20th of 2021. She had a pediatric cancer, very rare for an adult, and she did her best to fight through it. She went through a year of chemo. She went through radiation, had her leg amputated. She did everything could to try to beat this cancer. But it was heartbreaking for the family. She had two small children, and she was pregnant with her second child when she found out she had cancer. And she died 3 years later. So oh. I have two grandchildren, and I have obviously the four other children. My daughter Abigail's married, and then I have three other sons. My youngest son is 22, living with us, going to school, working full time. But I have beautiful children, and unfortunately, I've lost one of my beautiful daughters. And you can read about her by just reading Smash Sarcoma. And there's a big following of her as well. When she died, there were, even during the pandemic, there were like 2,000 people at her funeral.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That just definitely shows you what kind of impression, you know, she has on the world and what a wonderful person she was. And so, so sorry to hear that and that you've gone through that, because no parent goes through the loss of a child well. And I mean, just is such a, leaves such a hole. But I'm, you know, I bet you found some interesting blessings that come out of that experience, perhaps.
Yeah, the ironic thing is, in a period of 3 years, I lost my brother just older than me to pancreatic cancer. I lost my sister just younger than me to leukemia, and my oldest daughter to Ewing sarcoma, three different cancers. And I thought, if I was going to die, it was going to come from cancer. It wasn't going to come from a heart attack. And yet, my poor wife, my heart attack happened exactly 1 year after the death of my daughter, in between between the death and her funeral was right in between. So I had my heart attack on April 27th. She died on April 20th and was buried on May 1st, and my heart attack was right in between the two.
Oh.
And I definitely am very close to my daughter, and her death was definitely heartbreaking to me. And I've heard people can suffer, you know, heart attacks when they think of you know, their children and their deaths. And I certainly was thinking about my daughter at the time. It was just between her death and her funeral a year prior. But ironically, the night before my heart attack, I was in southern Utah with my daughter who has a photography business, and she wanted company. And at the exact time of my heart attack, the night before, that exact time, I remember looking, and she had just finished her photography shoot, and we were starting to drive home. And I can imagine if I'd had my heart attack then driving, or
you would not made it at all.
My doctor told me there's no way I would have survived if I had the heart attack anywhere else but where I had it.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just kind of give you the background on this heart attack that I had.
Yeah, please.
On April 27th, I was playing softball. I wanted to be able to play softball because when I grew up, when I was younger, I played baseball when I was a kid and I loved it. But because I traveled for 30 years with the FDIC, where I served as a bank examiner until my retirement, I thought, this is a great opportunity to be able to play ball again. I'll just play some softball, and it won't be too physically demanding, but still I could be able to have fun. So I got on a team. I basically created the team, called ourselves the Murray Misfits, just because we were a bunch of players who wanted to get together, didn't have a lot of experience and be able to play together. But I was playing shortstop, and it was the beginning of the fourth inning, and I know that during the third inning I'd actually scored a run. I know I ran around the bases, but I wasn't really tired. It wasn't anything. But we finally, our side was out, and I just walked into my position as shortstop. And all I remember is just waking up in the hospital. I don't remember. I had no pain, no heart pain whatsoever.
No dizziness, no pain in the arm, no shortness of breath, none of that.
Nothing.
That people hear about.
I had nothing that would have indicated that I was going to have a massive heart attack. And not only did I have a heart attack, I went into full cardiac arrest. And basically, my heart just stopped working. Mm-hmm. My heart just stopped working. I fell over dead. I was the most fortunate person, according to my doctor, that he's ever seen. And he's a cardiologist. Dr. Muhlstein, been a cardiologist for 45 plus years. He's currently serving a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But at the time, he said, you had a heart attack, full cardiac arrest, in front of a nurse across the street from the hospital. And this nurse took aggressive action immediately and started doing CPR. And even though she thought you were dead the whole time, she continued to do CPR for 15 plus minutes. And that can be exhausting. And the reason why I know she did it correctly is because you have broken ribs, and that's a sign that someone was actually doing CPR correctly, because you have broken ribs, and I also had a broken sternum. When I woke up in the hospital, I said to the doctor, are you sure I had a heart attack? He goes, yes, you've had a heart attack. I said, but my lungs are killing me. And he said, you're dealing with the results of, or the repercussions of, someone who knew how to save your life. Because if you weren't dealing with pains in your lung, you would be dead right now.
Wouldn't have been pushing hard enough.
Yes, and she was keeping oxygen to my brain and allowing for me to be able to have an opportunity to be saved. After about 15 minutes, they basically had the paramedics show up, and they used a defibrillator and resuscitated.
Administered shock.
That's correct.
But and then at that point, how many minutes had gone by from the time you had the start of it, onset, and then really got the heart going again?
It's got to be somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes that took place before they even showed up. And I think they told me I was resuscitated on the fourth try when they actually
administered it.
But I should also point out that there was also, she was doing CPR for 15 minutes and she was exhausted. So she told one of my teammates, I need you to do it when I'm tired. And then he did it for a few minutes. And she told another teammate, you need to do it for a few minutes. I need to take a rest. And then there was a police officer who happened to hear about the emergency, and he was a canine police officer, and he'd heard about it. He was close by. He was doing a stakeout. He drove up immediately with his car, and that's where you see the footage of her doing CPR on me, is because he happened to be driving in his car, and he drove right up to where it was. And this police officer then took over and started doing, you know, CPR as well. So I don't know the full amount of this that took place, but between her doing it for 15 minutes, interchanged with a couple of my teammates who she just asked to have them copy me.
You're going
or copy
on a half
her.
An hour.
Yeah, I don't know the exact time, but I know it was a long time.
Yeah.
And the doctor just was shocked that I could survive this. And the paramedics, even when they came to and they started asking me questions in the ambulance, they were shocked I could talk to them intelligently. I don't remember any of that. I don't remember talking to them intelligently, but they said that they were asking me questions and I was telling them my name. I was telling them my history, that my father died of a heart attack. They told me, I told them many things in the hospital, in the ambulance, which let them know that I was not a typical heart attack patient, that I was going to survive and not have brain damage and be able to fully recover. So what's remarkable about this is I still don't have any heart pain. I never had any heart pain, and I don't have any heart damage. They said that is just remarkable, that you can go into full cardiac arrest and not have any permanent heart damage. Unfortunately, my lungs were killing me, and my lungs were causing me challenges for 11 months. It wasn't until March of this year that my lungs...
Of 2023,
where I actually feel normal again. And
why was it that your lungs were hurting so bad?
Well, they basically crushed my ribs when she saved my life.
Yeah.
And they also... they broke my ribs and my sternum, and I'm not sure exactly the extent of that, but they were killing me for 2 months, my ribs. But then I found out just in March of this year that I was allergic to one of my heart medications. The day that I stopped taking that medication, it all went away.
Oh.
And now I feel 100% now. I was wondering if I'd ever fully recover, because my heart was never the problem. It was always my lugs. When I woke up, I told the cardiologist that I don't believe I really had a heart attack. And I said, it's my lungs. And he said, no, you had a heart attack. He says, but you're dealing with the repercussions of someone who knew how to save your life.
So Darren, your heart actually stopped. You had cardiac arrest and it stopped. Was there major blockage? Because I thought perhaps you had a widow maker, which is the closure of the left artery.
Yeah, so I had complete 100% blockage of one of my main artery, a 90% blockage of another artery, 80% of another, and I think they said 60%. So I had four stents put inside my heart. And I was awake during the whole thing. I had no idea. They were talking to me while they were putting in the stents, my cardiologist was, and then he says, I'm all done. And I thought, wow. They keep you awake when they're... I didn't have open heart surgery. I had stents put in into my arteries,
and I was
wide awake through the whole thing. It was just remarkable.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you feel any different right after they put the stents in? Did you feel like a rejuvenation, like you had more oxygen or anything? You just felt like you did before you went out, and passed out.
No, like I said, I was in extreme pain from my lungs. My lungs were killing me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a combination, maybe it's the medication they gave me, because they gave it to me from day one. It was I don't want to tell you the name of it because it's the repercussions are, the side effects are, I guess, different for everybody, but it's got a low side effect issue. And apparently I was one of those few people that it was causing huge issues with my lungs. I was coughing up garbage. I call it garbage, but sputum, and it was black, coagulated blood for weeks. And I mean,
awful.
Like the size of a golf ball. It was gross.
No.
You know, and the first night I couldn't breathe at all. And I really thought, this is it. I'm going to die for sure.
Yeah. I'm just suffocate.
I stayed up all night praying, God, please help me so I can survive this night. Because I had no idea if I tried to sleep at all, I'd just die. I just couldn't breathe anymore. And luckily the sputum, or they call it sputum or phlegm or, you know, mucus, it's slowly tailored off. And But I was dealing with that for 11 months, coughing garbage out of my lungs. I call it garbage, but that's not the real term of it. But anyway, the real issue is here is when I was in the hospital, the doctor said to me, if it wasn't for that nurse, you would not be here. And her name was Tanya Topham. And I am so grateful for her because she could have just...
Yeah, let's give some major kudos out to her for her action. And actually, on that video that the listeners can go see on YouTube, it shows her in action and an interview with her dealing with your situation. She's a hero.
She is truly here. It's remarkable. All she had to do was do nothing, and I'm not here. I'm dead.
Yeah.
All she had to do is just do what everyone else did, just watch. But you know what? This is an interesting story. She's only been a nurse for 12 years. She started her career in the cardiology department. When she saw that I had a heart attack, or assumed I had a heart attack, she ran out there immediately. She just barely had gotten to the ball field. She had started working at 4 o'clock in the morning, and my heart attack... A heart attack wasn't until 8 p.m. in the evening. So she'd been working all day, and her husband picked her up for work and said, let's go out to dinner. So he took her out to dinner, and then he said, let's go watch our sons play ball. She goes, I'm exhausted. I want to go home. Her husband said, no, let's go watch our sons play ball. And she was fighting with him and saying, no, I need to go home. I'm exhausted. But she listened to her husband, and it made a difference in my life.
It did.
Yeah, had she went home and not been there at 8 o'clock after being that, that's a, how many, 14-hour day?
Yeah.
And then doing CPR for 15 minutes? It's a miracle.
It is a total miracle. And you know what? I'm gonna read something to you because I was so fascinated with this story. I reached out to AI and asked it about your Widowmaker situation. And it says that survival rates for a Widowmaker heart attack, which is a type of heart attack that affects the left main coronary artery, can vary depending on the severity of the blockage and how quickly the person receives medical treatment. And however, it is considered a very serious and potentially life-threatening medical emergency, and immediate medical attention is crucial. You know what, that it is absolutely a miracle that she was there and applied immediate CPR to you rather than just like looking around, seeing if somebody else had kind of jumped into it. There's a doctor in the house, somebody that knew CPR. She was just prompted to get out there and get going. And she was very aggressive. And I saw the video. She's very aggressive on you. And you don't usually see people, you know, administer CPR as hard as she was, but it was critical that you got that kind of care to survive. So
absolutely. You're correct. If it was not for her and how aggressive she was with her CPR and how she didn't quit, even though she thought I was dead the whole time. And her husband said, good thing your family wasn't there. He said it was horrific to watch just her beating up on a body that looked dead because how aggressive she was and just seeing my head bounce up and down and just knowing that his wife was doing this on someone he thought was dead. Mm-hmm. And when I came to, he said he could not believe it. He said it was just such a miracle that everybody was there. Everybody who saw this, nobody could believe that I survived this heart attack. And I don't know why it was me. I don't know why exactly had the heart attack when I did and at the exact location where it made a difference. To have a heart attack and in front of a nurse who just barely got there, who had the training from early on in her, you know, experience as a nurse, how she didn't hesitate, how she continued to do it as you would have to do to be able to survive something like this with a massive, you know, heart attack when I went into cardiac arrest. And I know there's a reason for it. I don't know exactly what the reason is for it, but sometimes I feel cheated because people ask me, did you have any out-of-body experiences? I had none.
I, as well as anybody else listening to this, will really want to know that question right there. So you're saying you didn't really have any see the light, the tunnel, see the other side or anything. You didn't have that experience.
No, I had nothing like that at all. I just, like I said, I just woke up in the hospital, although they claim that I talked to him in the ambulance a little bit, but I don't remember that either.
Sure. Yeah. Just the shock of medication probably makes you just forget all that. You've talked to your rescuer in the past, and what would you say to her now for what she did for you?
Same thing I said to her before. I am so grateful for what she did for me. She was my guardian angel that night. And I'm so grateful that she would save the life of a stranger. And she said she never thought twice about it. As soon as she saw that I fell down, she said she had just barely sat down in the bleachers. She said, I just ran straight out there. I didn't think twice about it. And she said, I didn't give up because my training tells me you can't give up. You have to keep on giving them an opportunity to survive this until I could get a defibrillator that would be able to get my heart moving again. But
what did she think when she saw you come around?
Her comments were like, shock, unbelievable. She never thought I was going to make this. She didn't give up, but she said she thought I was dead. Mm-hmm. And she said her training taught her not to give up. But even she was heartbroken. She said she started crying because she didn't think I had any chance of surviving it. Mm-hmm. And when she was shocked. That's what she describes it to me. And we've went out to dinner, I think, four times now, my wife and I and her and her husband. Mm-hmm. And it's been just glorious to be able to spend time with them because we've become close because of this miracle that she saved my life.
Sure. Some of these situations just bring people together. Do you feel like coincidence that you two met and then this whole thing went down and she was the person that was there? Just coincidence or life has some kind of interesting meaning?
You know what? There's some kind of meaning there. She was raised a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as well. Mm-hmm. And as we have some things in common, but I would just say that she was meant to be there. There's no way this could have been just a coincidence. You can't have a husband begging you to come to a softball game after you've been working for 12 hours and fighting him the whole time saying you don't want to be there. And then the second you get there, you save someone's life. There's a reason for that.
Absolutely.
And she knows it as well. We both know it. We just don't know exactly what we're supposed to get from this. But we still see each other and we're going to be seeing, I'm going to be seeing her shortly. We talked just 2 weeks ago.
Fantastic.
And more about the fact that I'm now feeling 100% healed after realizing I was allergic to one of my heart medications I've been taking for 11 months.
Yeah, finally figured that one out.
Yeah,
thank goodness.
Well, it is such a miracle just to know that it was something that simple. I was thinking I'd never recover.
So, Darren, talk to me about your wife. Where was she that night, and how did she find out? Tell us that side.
So, I had listed when I was playing softball, I had to put a list of a contact of a person who, you know, they should contact in case of emergency. And so they pulled the paperwork out and saw that my wife's name was down there. So they immediately called her. But no, I'm trying to think if they actually called her. I don't want to get this wrong. No, they actually had a police officer who went to the door of, they got the address. A police officer went to the door of my home, said, your husband is in the hospital. He's in critical condition. And he basically let her know that I could easily die, and I should, or you know, and then I basically had died on the field, and that I'd been resuscitated, but it was still very critical condition. Yeah, and that she should immediately come. And he basically told her, come with me. And she says, I want to drive myself. So he followed the police officer through the hospital. When I saw my wife, the first thing I remember saying to her is, I'm so sorry. But she said that she thought for sure I was dead because even the police officer that went to pick her up told her that I was likely going to die. And I met with that police officer as well. And he like everyone else, is just shocked. It was the same police officer he was a canine police officer, like I said. He mm-hmm. had a canine dog. And everybody, like
he'd seen the whole thing go down.
Well, so when he got there, he took over. But even though that I had been resuscitated from the defibrillator, even everyone at the hospital said that my chances were still very slim because I went into full cardiac arrest and went without oxygen for a long period of time. And I know that you originally said it was up to 30 minutes, but I know it was somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes. I don't know the exact time, but at least 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's very rare that anyone survives that because even if they are resuscitated, they didn't get enough oxygen to their brain. And
that
after 5 minutes, you know, most people are brain dead or exactly. have brain problems. And I had no issues with my brain and no issues with my heart. So it's kind of remarkable in that regard.
It is remarkable. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's incredible that you have had this experience. And all the people that were at the ball field, your teammates, all those people that are around you, have you talked to them since? What was their impression of the whole thing?
Unfortunately, I was on a team called the Merry Misfits. I didn't know any of the players on my team.
Oh, you didn't? You were all just pulled together and yes. just for an evening to play.
Yes, it was. I created the team last minute just because none of us had a team, but the people at the Murray School just mentioned there were some other players who were interested in trying to get on a team, but nobody wanted to start a team. And I said, hey, I'll start a team, and you just give me everybody's name that was interested in playing. I created a team from people I didn't know.
Wow, so you guys had just started playing together.
I think it was our second game.
Oh.
And
so you probably haven't had a lot of dialogue back and forth with them.
I called one of my teammates. I got his number. He was the one that also did CPR that had taken over. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him, and I expressed my gratitude to him for being there and helping out with CPR. And he goes, Darren, ironically, he says, you won't believe this. He goes, I was actually an EMT, and I just moved here from Seattle. And he says, so I actually knew how to do CPR. He says, but she told me just a copy, and I didn't want to tell her that I already knew how to do CPR. He says, but he goes, when she would need a break, I just took over. And he says, but I've done CPR before, and I have experience. He says, so you had not only a nurse, but you had an EMT that was involved as well.
You're super fortunate. If you don't understand really how to do a good CPR, you can completely do it wrong, number one. Or if you're doing it even right, you can become fatigued and just so tired that you're not doing the patient any good.
Fatigue is an issue no matter what, even if you're experienced. I mean, for Daniel, he couldn't believe that she was a woman. I'm talking about my doctor. I mean, he said, a woman to be able to break your ribs? And he goes, well, there were a couple of men who helped out in between. He goes, but still, he said, that's what was critical. He says, because it showed that you were getting a lot of, you know, oxygen through the brain and blood moving through the body. He says, because that's proof of that. He says that people who really know how to do CPR will basically contribute to the patient having broken ribs.
And the reason why that happens is because when you push hard down on the rib cage, it has to go down far enough to actually squish the heart between the chest and the back. You're actually manipulating the heart, squeezing it so it sends out oxygenated blood to your organs. The interesting thing is it just usually just keeps your brain, your heart, your brain and your lungs going enough to provide some oxygen to your body, but oftentimes doesn't really get too much to your brain. And that's why people would normally not get enough in the first 5 minutes and suffer significant brain damage. So she was pushing hard to get that blood going in the right place, especially your brain, and helping you survive like you did. You're super blessed.
Absolutely. And, you know, the people that were involved in Save My Life, they were all given awards by the city of Murray. I mean, the paramedics, the Daniel Topham, who's just a citizen, not even from Murray, from West Jordan. I know the paramedics, the police officer, I think there was like six or seven of them, they were all given awards because they were all critical. I mean, yes, Dania Topham took the lead and she was aggressive, but the paramedics had to, revive me. You had to deal with, the police officer getting there and taking over to give her some reprieve. And it was a combination of all these things to come together. And they actually also blocked off State Street, which is a main street, to be able to get me to the hospital right away. Because I was literally, I had the heart unreal. Attack right across the street from the hospital, major mm-hmm. hospital here in Murray, Utah. And like my doctor said, he said, you had a heart attack in front of a nurse, across the street from the hospital, paramedics are there, fairly quickly, and it all worked out for me. And someday I'm going to figure out why, because I don't know at this point why.
Yeah, there's just sometimes there's parts of the story that we just don't understand at the beginning or throughout, but in the end, the second half, you just kind of find out the real aha moments, and that's what's so significant about your story is that there's a pre-life, there's a first half of your life, Darren, that is what it is, and then you reach this turning point where something significant happens to you, and then you just wonder what's going to happen in the second half of Darren Yule's life, and how's that incident and the situation sent, after that really affect you. And I want to kind of go there. I want to talk about how has this really kind of impacted you mentally, spiritually, emotionally? How has this impacted you to where Are you still the same Darren Ewell, or are you different than you were before, and how?
I think I'm different in a couple aspects. One of them is that I really want to live. I don't want to die. I didn't never want to die. And I think my will to live is probably another reason why I'm here. I've been researching a lot about cancer because I've had siblings and a daughter die of cancer. And, mm-hmm. and I still, been reading a lot about that, as well as, people who survived a heart attack. And I've been reading about how to eat healthy. And I've been trying my best to eat healthy. I mean, the healthier than I've ever eaten my whole life. And I've also, I do a lot of volunteer work because I retired. And I had my heart attack the week I was supposed to be working as an ordinance worker for the Jordan River Temple. For those who understand the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I work as an ordinance worker. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to work my very first day the week I had my heart attack, and I had to postpone that for a few weeks, and I've been working as an ordinance worker ever since. And I love that. I love that opportunity. I know, and a lot of the work we do in the temple for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints relates to the dead. We do work for the dead, and I thoroughly enjoy that, to be able to be an ordinance worker for that. I just find it ironic that the week I was supposed to start is the week that I couldn't start because of my heart attack until I could recover and be able to do that a few weeks later. But I'm really trying to live a long life, and so I know I have to try to eat healthy. I have to start exercising. I walk now 5 miles a day. I've been doing that for the last month since my lungs finally allowed me to not feel normal again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was coughing up mucus or sputum every day, 3 times a day for 11 months. And I don't know, you guys can't even imagine how difficult that is, but I dealt with that because I didn't want to die, and I was just trying to figure out what it is to have that go away, and to find out it's finally gone. It's just incredible. So I've been walking 5 miles a day. And it's more about I want to live. I want to live a life for my children who are still here, to be able to, raise my grandchildren. I watched my grandchildren. I have two. They're 6 and 4. I watched them by myself for the last 3 or 4 days. I loved every minute of it. And I, obviously want to be able to see my other children get married and have children as well.
So that sheer determination just to live and to have more time. Absolutely. Really kind of pushes you through those challenging times. Anyone else that's suffering from something like you went through or something similar, what would you say to them when they're really at the point where they think, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can get through this. I don't know if it's worth it. What would you say?
Let me say it another way. My sister, who just died of leukemia last year, cried to me and said, I want to live so bad, but I can't. And I hear people who don't want to live, and I don't understand it. She just cried and said, I want to live so bad. But even though after she went through a blood transfusion, my brother, allowed that to happen, and it didn't make a difference, she still died. I tell people, life is incredible. And obviously, we don't get to choose when we leave this earth. But you should try to live as long as you can and fight as long as you can. My daughter, Sarah, who died of cancer, fought for 3 years. They told her she wouldn't live more than 3 years when she was first diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And she didn't. She died at 2 years and 11 months. But she tried her hardest. They told her that it wouldn't make a difference to have her leg amputated. But she tried that as well. She tried anything. And I tell people, whoever's going through any kind of hardship, not to give up and to try. If it wasn't meant to be, and you are meant to leave this life a little earlier than you expected, then that's the way it was meant to be.
That's your time.
Yeah, but don't ever give up. Don't ever just say, I'm not going to try, because I admired my daughter. She tried for 3 years to live. She wanted to live for her children so much. Can you imagine? She was pregnant with her second child when she found out she had cancer, stage 4 cancer. She had a decision to make about that pregnancy as well.
Delivered that baby.
She delivered the baby at 8 months and totally healthy. And she's a beautiful, healthy girl today. For me, it was like, I never expected to have a heart attack. I can't even imagine to this day that I could have been literally dead for, 20 minutes. And I'm here today with no heart problems.
Yeah.
And it just is amazing to me. But there's like I said, a strong desire for me to live. I want to live so bad. I
don't just put a supercharge on your will to live.
I am. I do a lot of research about how I can be healthier and live a longer life. And I have a lot more to do now, more physical fitness I need to do, and more walking and more healthy eating. But I want to live to be able to enjoy my grandchildren and to enjoy life as long as I can.
Does it make you afraid at all, Darren? You know, just afraid of death?
I was afraid of dying of cancer, but I'm not afraid
that
anymore.
That wasn't the case, was it?
No, I'm not afraid anymore, actually. I really was afraid of dying of cancer after seeing the siblings that I was surrounded in, that were most closest to me in age, die of cancer in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. But I did not think that a heart attack was going to take me. But even though my father and grandfather died of heart attacks, I just didn't think this was going to take me.
And what sort of conversation have you had with your wife after this?
She's actually very supportive of me and my desire to try to eat healthy and to live a long life. And she's convinced that I'm going to. She's actually sure I'm going to live a long life now, because as my brother Mark, the one that told you about me, he said he thinks I got a pass. For some reason, I get a pass because my arteries are now like brand new, and I have a heart that's not damaged, and I feel fantastic. I feel fantastic right now.
That's great. That's great.
My wife is very supportive. She's been an incredible wife, and she's always been supportive.
Has she just been super thankful, though, that was not your time, that you were able to make it through and be able to spend more time with her?
You know what's ironic is she lost a daughter, and trust me, she was so close to Sarah as well. It's been heartbreaking for her, and to even talk about that is hard for her. She'll come to tears. You just bring up my daughter's name. Mm-hmm. But for me to have a heart attack a year later, and then her mother, who's 91, is also suffering because she'd broken her hip, and so she's got some health problems. So my poor wife is dealing with an alien mother, daughter just passed away, and a husband who nearly died of a heart attack and who's been dealing with lung issues for 11 months.
Yeah.
And she's remarkable. She's been able to fight through this, and she, I don't know where she gets her strength, but she has it.
Oh, what do you want to accomplish now? What are your goals now going forward? How would you like to live the rest of your life?
I love to serve. I love to serve. I don't know if it'll always be, you know, service for my church, the Church of Jesus Christ, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but I look at opportunities to serve people who are fighting cancer, or people who have, God, I'm afraid to even actually say this. The day I had my heart attack, I was visiting a neighbor who had a stroke, and I was asking how I could help him. That was the day I had my heart attack. And I said to him, this past month, can you imagine? I was trying to see how I could help you, and yet I couldn't even help you because I was going to die that night. But I want to help people, any people I can help. And I don't know what that encompasses, but if that means helping the people who are homeless or helping people that are suffering with you know, different addictions or challenges, I want to volunteer more. That's kind of what my life is trying to be about. This
fantastic. It's so interesting because that's a real common thread, you know, among individuals that I've talked with on this show. It's a very common desire, you know, to just, number one, live the best life that you can, do the things that you've put on hold that you'd like to accomplish, and especially help others. In any way, especially help them get through challenging times, you know, yeah. Things that come up that they didn't see coming in, and they could use, you know, a shoulder to lean on and encouragement coming from someone who's kind of walked in their shoes. And it looks like you are able to do that, especially now.
You described it better than I could have described it. That's kind of the way I feel, being able to help people the best way I can. Mm-hmm. I've been given a life for an extended life for some reason, and I'm going to try to serve the best I can for the time I have left.
That's fantastic, Darren. Anything that you would say to your brother, Mark? He's the one that got you in this chair. Anything you would say to him?
I love Mark. He's always been so charitable. If you don't know Mark, he's a person who's always been there to help others. In fact, when my father had his heart attack, he had two heart attacks, his first one, he basically couldn't take care of anybody, including his family, and Mark basically took care of the family for him, just took care of everything. And that's just the way Mark is. He's just always willing to help and to serve. And so very grateful to him. He's been a close very close brother, and I've always been close to him. And I know we played baseball when we were younger and probably have that in common. We've done a lot of hunting together, but I love spending time with him. And so I'm just going to tell him I'm very grateful for him and I love him very much.
That's so cool. You know, this has really been powerfully impactful to you and has touched you in various ways, you know, that have made you stronger. And if you were to wrap up, do a wrap up for me, how is Darren Ewell different now, right now, than you were before this incident happened? How has it just kind of like molded you into a different person?
I would just say that I'm a person who really wants to help other people. That's just it. I realize that I'm here for a reason. My life has been extended because I usually couldn't be here. And I had a stranger who helped me. If Daniel Toppin hadn't helped me, I wouldn't be here. So if I can help anybody, like you said, with anything, that's what I want to be. I want to be a better husband, better father, better at serving in any capacity, no matter what that is. And that's the way I want to be going forward, is just someone that you can look at if you need help, someone you can count on. And I'll be there to help them. And that's how I would end this particular session.
I love it. Well, you're a good man. And man, I can just see in your face, you know, that this has been hard. It's taken a while, and it will take some more time, you know, for you to try and deal with what just was dealt to you and what happened. You've gained some new relationships through it. And, you know, before we go, how does it make you feel towards your creator?
I am very grateful to God, grateful that he's allowed me to stay on this earth for a little bit longer. I know that my daughter, Sarah, when she passed away, there was a reason for that, but it was very hard. And why I didn't have an opportunity to, you know, after having a heart attack a year from her death, to be able to see her, who knows. But I would just know that there's a purpose for this life and that there's a life beyond this physical life here on earth. I can't wait to see my daughter someday. And if God wants me to live a little longer before that happens, that'll be fine. But I have a great appreciation for this life, but also knowing that there's a life after this life here on earth, and that life just doesn't end here. And that does give me a lot of comfort. And that's why I'm just going to live the longest life I can, do the best good I can on here on this earth while I'm alive, and then enjoy the eternities. And that's what's going to happen to me.
That's awesome. There's a plan for you, Darren Ewell.
I know that. I just don't know fully what it is yet.
That's okay. You're figuring it out as you go along.
That's good.
There's no handbook that we can get, whether online or hard book, that tells us exactly how this life unfolds and what how it's supposed to be until the time we leave it. It's all just, you know, go by trial and error. And it looks like you've run into a situation here that has taught you a lot of lessons and is still teaching you lessons, and ones that we all don't have to go out and play baseball or softball and have a heart attack and go down like you did and be worked on like you did by heroes to learn from the lesson you just talked to us about.
That's correct.
And so, you know, we really appreciate your story and your heartfelt testimony of, you know, how you've grown from it. And may all of us learn from what you just talked about. And I really appreciate that.
So thank you.
Thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome.
In closing, thank you. Thank you for taking the time of reflection and letting us share in your experience. Becoming a part of your journey ultimately impacts ours. So until we see each other again, stay alive to tell about it, would you please?
I'd love to.
Yeah. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.